former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line coming to you on a Sunday morning. Femi Abebefe hanging out here at Circa. Michael Lombardi in my old neck of the woods in Seattle, Washington. Yeah. Lombardi, how is the Pacific Northwest treating you, buddy? Good morning.
Everywhere I go, everybody asks me how four-game Femi's doing. I'm saying, look, don't bother him. The man's got preseason games to watch. He's handicapping. You're a legend here in this town. I mean, this is the music. A lot of great musicians have come from here, but I think there's a lot of buzz about four-game Femi up here in the Pacific Northwest. What a view! I've got a great view of the stadium here, Lake Washington. It's awesome. It's good to be here. Coach Belichick's here doing a little bit of work himself, so it's all fun.
Oh, it's amazing. They call the stadium, Husky Stadium, the greatest setting in all of sports because you have the stadium right there on Lake Washington, an unbelievable view. Like if you've never been out there for a game, especially a big game, I suggest anybody to go out there to Husky Stadium because it's a breathtaking, especially when the sun is out. You see Lake Washington sparkling, they're sailgating, all the boats are parked up right next to the stadium. It's a really, really fun experience on game day. But we don't have to talk about the Pacific Northwest. I'm sure all of the listeners out there, they appreciate it, but everybody else wants to hear our thoughts on other things. But we do have a fun show for you guys over these next couple of hours. 30 minutes from now, Troy Rank of Mile High Sports, he's a Broncos insider, will join us as the Denver Broncos will be taking on the Indianapolis Colts later on this afternoon in their first preseason game. Jared Stidham expected to get the starting reps. Then we'll see Bo Nix coming in as QB2. We'll also get a chance to look at Anthony Richardson in that game after he missed a large chunk of the 2023 regular season. Then in hour number two at 11:15 Eastern, 8:15 Pacific, Simon Hunter, NFL betting analyst over at the Action Network, will get his thoughts on the futures markets. Which week one games is he already circling? Is he dabbling into the preseason? We'll get Simon's thoughts in hour number two. But we're actually going to start on this Sunday, not with the National Football League, but with Team USA. The U.S. men's basketball team wins gold once again in a fun game yesterday against the host nation, France, 98-87. Game flies over the total. France able to cover the big number, 16.5. They were catching as USA brings home the gold. They were perfect 6-for-6 over there in Paris. But they were challenged definitely in the semifinal game and also in the final against France, but they were able to get it done behind the backs of Steph Curry's phenomenal shooting performance.
I mean, what I love, Femi, is to watch him. You know, I think when you have great players on your team and, you know, there's always going to be great moments and there's going to be really pressure moments. And even great players sometimes don't want to be involved. You know, they shy away. You know, Curry ran to the roar. I mean, there's an old saying of the lions that you have to run to the roar because lions set the trap. The oldest lion in the tribe is the one who roars the loudest. So when you hear the roar, you run away from the roar right into the trap of the lions. And I thought Curry was the roar. He was incredible, and he loved it. And he embraced the pressure, and he embraced carrying the team, and there was no one else going to do it. I mean, he took the game over, and I thought the other players were more than happy to allow him to do it, which was incredible on their part. Because remember, Steve Kerr is managing a tremendous amount of egos here, right?
Yes.
And everybody thinks they're the best player in the league, all of them, including, you know, every member of that team. So I just was proud of our country. I was proud of the effort the players gave. And more importantly, I was proud of how important it was for our NBA, for these NBA players, you know, to wear that gold, to play to the level. I mean, Drew Holiday, I mean, obviously we traded for the great Nolan's Noel. But, I mean, you talk about one of the great selfless players, self-aware, do all the things he has to do really well. I mean, it's really you feel appreciative towards those men to do what they did yesterday. And it was an honor to watch it. It really was.
Yeah, I think that's like the beauty of the Olympics, especially like because we most Olympians, like this is their biggest stage, like whether it's Simone Biles or Noah Lyles, Sha'Carri Richardson, the Olympics is the biggest stage in their sport. But for these NBA guys, it's not really seen that way. Like the NBA Finals is the pinnacle of professional basketball. But for them to give this much care and this much kind of just pride in winning for their country and winning a gold medal. I thought it's always beautiful to see every single like 4 years whenever the Olympics come around. We even saw it with Serbia and Nikola Jokic. I think people were even joking about how, wow, he looks happier to win the bronze medal than he did last year to win the NBA title because he was doing it for his country. He had Serbia on the front of his chest. And we saw in the game against Serbia, the United States guys, whether it was Curry, LeBron, or Durant, how much they cared in that game, and then also how much they cared against France when France, boy, they started to make a rally because it looked like early in that fourth quarter, we were comfortable. It's like, okay, we're going to win the gold. We're up double digits, but here comes France and Wembanyama and Yabusele. Like what a performance he had in the game. And the crowd, obviously, behind France since the game is being played in Paris, it looked like it could fall away, could slip away from Team USA, but Curry was there to save the day. I mean, the shooting performance that he had, 8 of 12 in the final 24, in the final for us, 24 points that he scored in the game after he went with 9 three-pointers in the semifinal after shooting only 5 of 20 the rest of the tournament. Like, in the biggest games, Steph Curry came up big for Team USA, and we were able to win gold. But I just thought it was really, really cool to see how much they cared about that. And that's why we cared. Everybody was engaged with this, Michael. Like, everybody loved watching them play because they really, really took a lot of pride in wearing the stars and stripes.
No question. And it made me prideful to watch it. I thought it was how important it was and the way they played defense. I mean, you know, this notion that the NBA guys don't want to play defense, they did. I mean, Anthony Edwards' defensive temperament was incredible when he was in the game. And, you know, at the end of the game, when they needed to win the game, you know, it was the players knew that Curry was electric. In the last two games he's played, he's been sensational. And so, you know, it's an amazing story for a young man. It's really an American story, right? It's here's a young kid who grows up in Charlotte. He can't get any ACC offers. He has to go to Davidson. People are not sure he can even play in the NBA. And he ends up becoming one of the greatest NBA players of all time. And it's really remarkable. It's remarkable about how he's been able to do that. And what a humble human being, too. You know, he does things with grace and he does things with tremendous poise. And that's what you want from your great players. And I think it was really fun to watch. It was incredible. So it was a great Sunday, a Saturday, I mean. Plus, we had preseason games going on all over the place. So, you know, there's a lot of flipping going on, Femi. I mean, you needed four TVs yesterday.
Hey, the TVs were active. They were definitely active. I had the preseason stuff on.
You better put new batteries in that remote today before you get going.
Tell you what, I've changed out the batteries about 5 times this summer. So it's been a lot. Costco's taking my money, man. I'm going in and getting the big AA packs. We're making sure that we're locked and loaded because we can't have the batteries running out of life there and slipping on us. But one last thing on the Olympics, though, because it was our 5th straight gold medal for Team USA after the bronze medal in 2004 in the Athens games. LeBron James able to win Olympics MVP, averaging 14.6 boards and 8.5 assists on 66% shooting. Victor Wembanyama, 20 years old, I thought he was phenomenal in the game, 26.7 rebounds, 2 assists. After the game, he said, quote, "I'm learning and I'm worried for the opponents in a couple of years." And then he was asked about if it was in FIBA or the NBA. He said everywhere. I think, and you saw how much it meant to Wembanyama. Like, he was in tears after the game, and he did a hell of a job. They won silver medal and stuff. Like, they were obviously a big underdog in the game, but it just meant so much to try to win the gold in front of his host nation. I think those tears are going to be a fuel for him to eventually go ahead and take the throne as one of the best players that we've ever seen. Like, the kid is unbelievable that he was able to play like that against a team loaded with Hall of Famers.
Really is, and he's only going to get better. He's going to get bigger, stronger.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he is everything that Kevin Durant was, and he may be better, and he's going to be better.
Yeah, and
I mean,
he's taller.
He just has more skill. He's taller. You know, when he stood next to Durant, I couldn't believe how much taller he was than Kevin Durant. And look, I love Kevin Durant. Nobody has a prettier shot, but Wemby is. I think the league is going to be scared, and the Spurs are going to get this thing turned around. And if you're in the West, which is what we talked about all offseason, it's weird how the West is so good. And if you were LeBron and you had a chance to go somewhere, I'm not sure the West was where you wanted to stay because you're not going to be the best team in the West at the Lakers. There's no question.
Yeah, and that is the one thing, like watching Curry and watching LeBron in these Olympics, I really hope that somehow, some way, that their teams can be a little bit more relevant as it pertains to winning the title. Because Curry, I mean, right now as it stands, the Warriors are going to be mediocre this upcoming season. He's too good to be on a mediocre team. Like, he still has a lot left in the tank to be a contending level player, as does LeBron James. At 40 years old, he's got the gray in the beard, and he's going coast to coast on stuff. Like, it's like, it's just, we need these guys to be relevant. But when you look at the odds board, the Lakers are 14-1 to win the West. The Warriors are 17-1 to win the West. They're not close to those top tier teams that are going to ultimately be vying to represent the Western Conference.
And I think those are too low of numbers. I think they could easily be more 20-1 teams.
Yep.
I mean, you know, considering now, obviously those numbers are positioned in case of injuries and a lot of things would have to go correct for them. But I think to me, that is the danger. But look, you know, these guys today, they take care of their bodies. They're getting, as they get older, other than one guy doesn't take care of his body, but most NBA players do, you know? And so it's you know, because they want to have these long careers, and you can have a longer career. I think we're seeing it. You know, when I was watching LeBron, I'm thinking like, okay, Aaron Rodgers. Now, he didn't play the other night against the Washington Commanders, understandable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, what does he look like as he comes back off this Achilles at his age? So those are things that are interesting to see, because the way modern medicine and the way that they're able to recover these players, it's, you can't, you know, 40 is just a number, right? I don't know if it's a signature number any longer.
Yeah, your guy Embiid was able to finally get a championship there, winning the gold medal.
They carried him to it. Let's be clear. I mean, he played five. I mean, it was a high school game. He played 5 minutes in the first half, five in the second, and then when the game is on the line, the greatest player in the history of basketball was sitting next to Kerr. That's all needs to be said, right?
He was egging on the crowd from France when they were booing him, because of course Embiid committed to playing for Team USA and not Team France. But that was an interesting moment during the gold medal ceremony for Team USA. USA, five straight Olympic gold medals. On the other side, we'll recap what we saw in the preseason and start to look ahead to today's two games that we have in the National Football League. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi here on a Sunday morning on VSiN. We had 9 preseason games yesterday in the National Football League. A lot to take away, but we want to start with these rookie quarterbacks that we saw in action. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, all those guys that were out there on the field. And Michael, I think you want to kind of make the theme of this segment the everybody calm down segment, because the takes are flying after what we saw yesterday.
Look, I think everybody needs to calm down, you know, and I thought Caleb was outstanding. I thought J.J. McCarthy looked good. You know, Gardner Minshew looked great. You know, Aiden O'Connell looked tremendous. Sam Darnold looked wonderful. Mm-hmm. Calm down. It's preseason. It's cover three. It's cover one. No one's doing anything, right? I thought, to me, when you watch the beginning of the Raider game against the Vikings, I mean, look, the Raiders had their first team defensive line out there. The Vikings had their first team O-line. They blocked them. Now, there was no games. There were no stunts. There was no blitzes. It was easy. The game moved quickly. The game moved nice. You know, Jaden Daniels had the first drive of the game, converted a third down, made some nice throws, stayed in the pocket. But again, it's a very simplistic game right now, and guys are going to look good. The speed of the game is slow. It's a great start, though. I think you see some teams that look like, you know, they've been practicing and working and all those things. But the quarterback play should be, especially for guys like O'Connell and Darnold and Minshew, who have had a lot of experience, they should look really well. I thought McCarthy's poised. I thought Daniel's poised. I thought Caleb was poised. I think those are all positive signs. Mm-hmm. But let's just be clear here. There's going to be bumps in the road. This was really basic football 101. So let's just calm down a little bit here. So I think the only way you get really worried, Femi, is if your guy doesn't play good here.
Okay.
If it looks bad here. You know, now we didn't see much of Drake May, right? So we don't know what that looked like. Joe Milton moved around. He's the sensation of the Patriot camp. But, you know, he held the ball a long time, but the protection was good, made some throws. Great. Wonderful. Slow game. Like, we just have to – we cannot, as I wrote about on VSiN this week, this is not going to determine the week one lines or who we're going to bet on. It's only going to determine how the progress of the players is developing. As for the quarterback battles, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, because that's what I wanted to ask you about, was like, hey, like, if somebody looks bad, should we be alarmed by this? But let's get to the quarterback battles. Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, both guys were able to lead decent drives. Only one series for O'Connell, 7 of 9, 76 passing yards. They ended up settling for a field goal after he got sacked on a third down. Minshew led a couple TD drives there, 6 of 12, 117 passing yards, a passing touchdown. They also had another touchdown there. Right now over at DraftKings, Minshew's minus 130 to be the week one starter. O'Connell even money. And Antonio Pierce said we shouldn't read too much into who starts week one of the preseason, even though they did go with O'Connell. But it feels like when we talked to a lot of these Raiders beat writers, they think O'Connell's the guy that the Raiders want to be the week one starter. I guess, what did you take away from how both of those guys played against the Vikings?
Well, I mean, look, O'Connell only had two incomplete passes. It was an easy game. Brian Flores did nothing scheme-wise, nothing. He played very vanilla. It was a preseason type atmosphere in terms of intellectual challenges for the quarterback, nothing. So it's hard to take anything away from it, right? The receivers were open, free access, all those things. So look, I think the issue for the Raiders is going to be, is the offensive line going to be good enough? Second play of the game, the right guard got pushed right back into the quarterback's lap. He had to move around. Those are the kind of things you're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you see Cody Whitehair playing left guard for him and he gets pushed back, now they're counting on Cody Whitehair to be a player. Like, these are the kind of just instances that you're watching in these preseason tapes to think, okay, when the game gets more alive and more violent with the speed of the game, then can these players hold on? So I would be a little bit – we're not judging anybody. We're not changing anybody's power rankings. I do say this, though, about Caleb Williams and about J.J. McCarthy. Their poise, along with Jaden Daniels, their poise was very good, right? Their poise and their ability to handle what they were given on the plate, you got to give them A-plus for that. And that's an encouraging sign. Now we see what they're going to build on as they move forward.
So I want to ask you specifically about Jaden Daniels, because last week, Zach Ertz, who's now with the Washington Commanders, was talking to a local news station out there, and he was asked about Daniels, and he said, quote, "A lot of times you talk about rookies, it's like this guy is going to be really good. Jaden is good now." This is Zach Ertz, who played with a young Carson Wentz. He played with a young Jalen Hurts. And he's saying this about Jaden Daniels, saying that, oh, he's not going to be good. He's already good. What do you make of those comments, and based on what we saw yesterday with the poise under center?
Well, I think that's a great comment from a veteran player, because I think what it tells you is he's won him over with practice, right? Now, look, the Jets had their backups out there on the field the whole time, and the Washington Commanders started McLaurin. They started Dotson. You know, now, is the offensive line going to be good enough? But I thought Daniels' poise was really good. But, again, it's going to be a growing process. Can they run the football? Are they going to be good enough up front where they are with the offensive line? That remains to be seen. But it's certainly a great step, because what you want your young quarterback to do is have command and win over. It's something Zach Wilson didn't do. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't do this at the Jets. He didn't win anybody over with his work ethic. Part of this is a lot about off the field. It's a lot about what happens between the preparation to the practice field to the next practice. And Daniels clearly has done that. And I think his arm, his athleticism is very good. They have great skill. Now, can they hold up with Scott at left tackle? I don't know. Is Paul going to be good enough to be the right tackle? We don't know. Now, we'll see what happens as they move forward. But to me, that's the question mark about Washington. Is this offensive line going to be good enough? Can they run the football? And the game situation dictates, too. You know, if you're getting a lot of third downs, I don't care who you are. Yeah. You know, I don't care what kind of billing you get. You're getting a lot of third and tens, no matter what. You know, you're looking at a 33% conversion rate for anybody, for Tom Brady. So that's the hard thing to do.
Drake May, we saw him Thursday night briefly, one series, three passing attempts in the rain. What did you make of that? The fact that he didn't get that many reps. I know people are saying that, well, the backup offensive line, they don't trust it and this and that. They don't want to get him out there and throw him to the wolves. But Brissett's going to be your week one starter. If May's not going to play in the preseason, when is he going to play and develop?
Well, I think if I were the head coach of New England Patriots, I'd have tried to get my offensive line to a level that's going to be good enough to block Cincinnati in the opening game. And you're not going to get that level when they're all standing next to you in the preseason game. And you got to get Drake May reps. He needs reps. It's not going to be practice reps. He needs reps, because I think what you saw yesterday from Caleb, what you saw from JJ's, Darnold, McConnell, you saw a rhythm to their game, right? Processed. Their feet and their arm were tied together, and they got rid of the ball. Understanding it was simplistic, but still it was good. What we saw with Drake May wasn't that. He needs reps, and I think you need to play him. I mean, look, Zach Taylor played Joe Burrow the other night against Tampa.
Yep.
I mean, this is a complete 180 for Zach Taylor to play his players, but I think he's been stung by being 0-4 the last 2 years in the first two games of the season that he better change what he's doing, right? I mean, look, here's what I would say to you. If Andy Reid's playing Patrick Mahomes in a preseason, just the thought, maybe we should play our guys too.
I've been screaming that for a couple of years now. I'm like, Mahomes is the most valuable player in the league by far. The guys out there in the preseason, everyone else is chewing sunflower seeds with backwards caps and listening into the play calls. Like, what are we doing? I don't know. It just seems strange that people would pass up some of these opportunities there. And I thought it was asinine.
What I love, though, I got to tell you, the thing I love the most was Nick Sirianni saying, well, it rained, so I didn't want to play my starters. I had no idea rain could be a deterrent to anything. I didn't know this.
Like, apparently it's baseball. Rained, yeah, it's baseball.
Yeah, like we had a rain out. Like, I mean, seriously, if you don't want to play your starters, that's fine. Nick, you got, you know, Hurts has got a lot of reps and all that. Yeah. But to me, like you just said, I think if Andy Reid's playing his guy, look, Parcells has ingrained this into anybody who's been around him, obviously Coach Belichick too. The offensive line is like a boxer. And if they don't spar in the preseason, they're not going to get ready for the fight. Just the way it is. It's just, and for us as a betting network and handicapping games, these teams that don't play their offensive line early, you know, they could start the game, right? They could start the game and look like it's going to be fine. But by the fourth quarter, when everybody's exhausted and their fundamentals start to break down, and games in mostly in the NFL are decided in that fourth quarter, you want to bet against them.
100%. And conversely, Drake May, a guy who's not expected to start week one, he plays one series. A couple of other guys not expected to start week one. McCarthy and Michael Penix.
Bailey Zappe. They're going to cut Bailey Zappe.
Yeah, get him out of here.
No one's trading for Bailey Zappe. Yeah. Let's just put that out there, okay? Like, no one's trading. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody will take him on an if, because we've got a lot of backup quarterbacks. Drew Locke's hurt. You know, we've got some quarterbacks that are hurt. But come on, no one's trading for Bailey Zappe unless it's a seventh if in 2027.
Yeah. We saw Michael Penix Jr. play five series for Atlanta. Like, that's what I thought we were going to see for Drake May, four or five series, because he's not going to get those reps, at least early on in the regular season.
He's like, he's going to be like that old antique car. He's going to go in the garage for 3 years, so he better play five series.
Exactly. Michael Penix, 9 of 16, 104 passing yards. Had a nice pass down the sidelines. Maybe we'll miss him at the University of Washington. But Michael Penix is really good for the Falcons. J.J. McCarthy also really good for the Minnesota Vikings. On the other side, we got Troy Rank of Mile High Sports to break down what we'll see from Bo Nix later on this afternoon here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, rolling along on a Sunday morning. Michael Lombardi on the road out in the great city and state of Seattle, Washington. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. We will continue our National Football League discussion with our first guest on the program. He's a writer for the Denver Post columnist. He also is an insider for Mile High Sports. The one and only Troy Rank joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line to talk some Denver Broncos and ahead of their preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts later this afternoon. Troy, good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. Well, I want to start off with Bo Nix. He's going to be running with the twos, it sounds like, later on this afternoon when they take on the Colts. What should we expect in terms of how much workload he'll get today, and how has Bo Nix looked throughout training camp up to this point?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. He's made steady progress. It was a little clunky early. He found his rhythm. He's been really good in the red zone. He's shown more mobility than I think most of us expected that, you know, didn't watch him in person in college. But I would expect him to get somewhere between 15 and 20 snaps today with the twos. So Jared Stidham gets around 15 snaps. That's probably two drives with the ones. Then Nix goes in, and then Zach Wilson will play probably predominantly the second half. And then they're going to flip the script next week against the Packers at home. Bo Nix will start and get 15, 20 plays. And if this goes as it's trending now, Nix should be in position to be named the starter after that second preseason game next Sunday. Now, again, if he looks overwhelmed mentally, and, you know, he just doesn't look ready, they can clearly go with Stidham. But there's no real upside to Stidham. I mean, you know what you're going to get. He's a steady backup, popular in the locker room. he's earned the right to get this first preseason start in a lot of ways, but this season is about the future, not the present. It's about developing Bo Nix. Sean Payton has staked his reputation on this draft pick. And if Nix shows, as he's shown in camp, that he's mentally capable of handling the responsibility of line of scrimmage, getting him out of huddle, run a clean operation, there's no reason not to start the clock. I mean, the guy played 61 FBS games. I mean, I think he played with Bo Jackson at Auburn and Dan Fouts at Oregon. I mean, he's an older guy. Like, if he's ready, you got to get him out there.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. But let's shift to the running back. Javonte Williams coming off the knee last year wasn't the same back he was before the knee. You know, I thought he was one of the top five players in the league before he hurt his knee. What do you see of him this summer? And is he back to that old form, which would make fantasy people really excited to draft him?
Yeah, I got in the crosshairs of fantasy football folks right before camp started saying, are Javonte Williams and Samaje Perine competing for one spot in the roster? And at that time, in my mind, they were clearly, because in spring practice, Michael, Javonte Williams did not have the burst. He did not look right. And I'm not going to say he was overweight, but sometimes when football players beef up, not like bad weight, but just beef up, he lost some of his explosiveness. And I'm just like, man, I don't know, because people forget last year was a miraculous comeback from ACL, PCL surgery. But the last 10 games of last year, he averaged 3.2 yards per carry. He ran out of gas. He came back too soon, in my opinion. He should have come back probably closer to November. He never missed a game. And then he ran out of gas at the end of the year. And then he's trying to put on more weight, be bigger, bulkier back. That didn't work in spring. I'm like, oh, man, he's at a crossroads here. And then Sean Payton had a conversation with him in June before they left after OTAs and pointed to the UNC film he was watching of him and said, I want that guy. I want to see that guy. And Javonte, who is all about faith, family, football, he's a simple guy. He went back to North Carolina, lost 10 pounds. He showed up in camp, and it was noticeably different than what we had seen in June practice. So he looks good. He looks good. I'll say this, though. He's going to get tested by Audric Estime, the kid from Notre Dame. I mean, that guy is an absolute hammer near the goal line. He doesn't need Siri to find the end zone. And they've had issues with running back touchdowns for years here. Devontae led them in running back touchdowns last year with 3. So I would warn you, in fantasy league, while I think Devontae is going to rebound this year, I'm not sure he's going to be their ace guy at the goal line because of Estime. And we might start seeing that today with Estime against the Colts.
We're hanging out with Denver Post columnist and host of the Broncos podcast, Troy Rank, here on the Progressive Guest Line. This is the Lombardi Line, Femi Bebefe, Michael Lombardi. Troy, the betting markets are very pessimistic as it pertains to this Denver Broncos team. You're a straight shooter. You like to evaluate things from not the rah-rah lens, but from a practical lens. Do you agree with a win total of 5.5? They're the clear fourth place team right now in the West, according to the betting markets. Is that how you see it when you handicap the other teams in that division in comparison to the Broncos?
I give them a little bump. I think they're a 6-win team. I have them going 6-11. I do believe this is the year that they're better than the Raiders. I mean, it is crazy the fact that you guys know you're out there. They've lost to the Raiders 8 times in a row, and they've lost to the Chiefs 16 of their last 17. So 24 of 25 games in their last against those two teams they've lost. 1-24. That's a problem when you're trying to make progress. But this could be the year they finally at least even the ledger against the Raiders and split against them. So I see the Broncos as a 6-win team. The caveat people internally talk about how Sean Payton has never won fewer than 7 games. He is not buying into the idea this is a rebuilding project. We all are. When you decided to eat $53 million in dead money on Russell Wilson this year instead of next year it's going to be 32, it's like, okay, you're setting yourself up for a rebuilding year. To them it's more transition than rebuilding. It's semantics. They're going to be young in a lot of positions. And it makes them interesting. Their camp has a lot more competition than we're used to around here. But when you look at their roster, who besides Pat Surtain and Quinn Meinerz are other teams just running to say they would take in a heartbeat? And that's the issue. They just don't have a lot of elite talent. Now, they have a very interesting draft class. I just talked about Estime, this Devon Vele, this receiver from Utah. They've got some pieces. You're like, maybe there's something there, but that's been their issue. I covered the Rockies forever, and the Rockies cornered the market on 4th and 5th outfielders. and utility infielders. Oh, these guys all get to the big leagues. It's like, I know, but you need impact players. And beyond Sertan, beyond Quinn Meinerz, who are those guys? So obviously one of them eventually has to be Bo Nix. If not this season, then next. But where are those other pieces coming from? But the one place they're better this year than last year, they've invested in the O-line, and with Powers, McGlinchey, Miners, and Bowles, they're going to be good up front, and they've substantially improved their defensive line with the addition of John Franklin Myers and Malcolm Roach in terms of being able to slow the run. They're not going to stop it, but slow the run. So they should be improved in certain areas, but who are those X-factor guys that we don't know about now, whether it's Marvin Mims Jr. or Estime or Greg Dulcich at tight end, where we're like, man, we didn't see that coming, because that's what they need. They've got enough kind of ordinary pedestrian players to fill out a roster. They need that, you know, 5 to 10 guys you look at that win games on Sunday.
Yeah, I think after they gave up 70 points to Miami, they ended up averaging 24 points allowed per game. But if you throw that game out, which was obviously an aberration, 70 points is hard to give up in any game. You know, the defense actually responded after that. And I do think John Franklin Myers is a really good addition to their team. DJ Jones, you know, Zach Allen, those guys have got to come through. And I think when they rush the passer, whether it's Cooper or Browning or even Benito, they have to do that. So what's your sense of the defense as you've watched it? I know, you know, when the offense is good during training camp, everybody doesn't worry about the defense because neither can be good at the same time.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I can't tell you how many days the defense has won the day at training camp since Peyton Manning retired. I mean, it is a boring script. But the difference this year, Michael, in the defense, Vance Joseph did a couple of interesting things last year. After that 70-point just absolute debacle, I mean, there was talk like, man, is he going to get fired? And I've covered Vance. I've covered Vance since he was a player at the University of Colorado in the early 90s. And he stayed calm. He was calmer than a lagoon. Everyone's pointing fingers. He trusted his players, and he switched the scheme. They tried to blend his scheme and the previous scheme, and it was more the previous scheme. And finally, Joseph's like, we got to junk it. We got to make this, because it looked like at times some guys were playing zone, some were playing man. There was clear miscommunication, and it all was laid to bear against Miami. And so after, as you mentioned, after that, they adjusted. And the reason they saved their season last year and were competitive, that five-game win streak, that had nothing to do with the offense other than one game. During that five-game win streak, they had 16 takeaways. And they were holding teams. They were punishing teams in the pass game. Their rush defense was always still vulnerable. But they found a way to win, which was turn the ball over, and then Denver started running the football. And that's going to be their formula this year. Be boring. Run the football, throw it 20 to 25 times, try to win close games. But the difference I see in training camp this year, they are more aggressive and more physical. Part of the reason Justin Simmons isn't here anymore, and I love Justin as a ball hawk, John Payton wanted more physicality from that position. They wanted more physicality across the board. They've been really aggressive up front in training camp, getting after it, and, you know, to be basically telling guys, yeah, go forward. It's not read and react. We are going to make plays. DJ Jones, in fact, you brought his name up. He told me he says there's some shades of the 49ers with this defensive front. And that surprised me. And he said, hey, I'm not saying we're San Francisco, where he came from. He's like, but this team, we're getting after it up front.
Oh, that's great analysis there. He is Troy Rank, covers the Broncos as a columnist for the Denver Post and host of the Broncos podcast. Troy, thanks for the analysis as always. Be well.
Thanks,
you got
Troy.
It, guys. Have a great show. See ya.
Good stuff. Troy joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. We'll react to what he had to say and also break down some other NFL headlines coming up next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi here on a Sunday. A lot of football this weekend, and we absolutely love it. Thank you to Troy Rank, columnist at the Denver Post, who joined us in the last segment. Troy has covered the Broncos and Colorado sports for a long time, so I think it's always good to get his thoughts on where things stand. And I thought it was really interesting that he mentioned this in the last segment, that the Broncos are going to be better in both sides of the trenches, the offensive line and defensive line. And the win total sitting at 5.5. We were talking about this a little bit during the break. When you have a coach like Sean Payton, who's won a lot of games, has never won fewer than 7 games in his career, it feels like that's an overplay, that 5.5 win total. Like, the market thinks that this is going to be a dreadful team, and I don't think I really agree with that.
Well, I mean, they're 8-9 last year, and they lost two games to the Raiders, and both of them, the first game was, you know, came down to they missed a field goal. Mm-hmm. Raiders converted a third and long. Garoppolo scrambled to his left and got the first down and won the game. But I think that stat that he gave was so telling. 24 out of 25 games between the Raiders and the Chiefs, the Broncos have been on the losing end, and that's got to change. I agree. I think this team won 8 games last year. Sean will manage the game. I think you have to be really, really understanding of how to manage a game to avoid losing. I don't think he's going to put Bo Nix out there and say, okay, Bo, here's 40 passes. Why don't you just take us on, put us on your shoulders? No, no, no. He's going to use Bo's legs. He's going to use Williams' legs, Perrine's legs. Obviously, there's going to be throws. But Russell Wilson, what he did really well for the team last year was simply protect the football, right? I mean, that's what he did. They finished 17th in the league in turnovers, you know, in terms of not killing themselves. So that was good. Fourth in the league in interceptions. They fumbled too much, but they were only fourth in the league in interceptions. So I think they're going to improve in those areas. I really do. And I think defensively, if you throw out week 3 of the season where they gave up, you know, 70 points to the Miami Dolphins, they came around. They overcame that adversity. I mean, theirs is a 1-5 team that finishes 8-9. So obviously there's a lot of character and competitiveness within the framework of this team. So yeah, I like the over here. I don't see them being – they're good in the offensive line. I think the defensive line with the additions that they've made with John Franklin Myers certainly helps them to go along with Zach Allen. I mean, they're going to be hard to run the football. And last year, you could run the ball on them. Last year, they were 32nd in the league in yards per attempt allowed. But you have to be careful here, Femi, because that 32 represents the Miami game where they gave up 350 yards rushing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so you throw that out, and then obviously the Jets ran the football on them too. So once they corrected that the second half of the season, I think it became a better team, and I expect them to be a better team this year. I think the number's way too low. I really do.
Yeah, no, I'm full agreement for me. And I think one thing that really that I loved about having Troy on is that Troy, he's not one of those beat writers or people that's close to the team that's going to give it to you from the rosy-colored glasses. And that's not to throw shade about anybody that we have on as a guest, but Troy is going to give it to you straight how he sees it. He thinks that this is kind of a 6-win team, so he barely likes the over. But one thing that I do like what he said is that Sean Payton is not buying the notion that this is some sort of rebuild. Like, Sean Payton clearly believes that they're further along than what the betting markets think and what public perception thinks. And I think that's how he's going to coach this team up. Like, I think that this could, not to say that this is going to be a surprise team, and I'm saying that the Broncos are going to the playoffs. I'm not predicting that, but I think that they could go 7-10. I don't think that's a crazy outcome for this team, if as long as they just play it down the middle of the fairway, which is what I anticipate is what he intends to do with Bo Nix as a starting quarterback. So the market thinks that this is going to be a dreadful team. I just think that they're going to be a below average team, which if they're below average, they still go over the win total of 5.5, and that over is plus 105. So I think that that's a solid look for the Denver Broncos. Glad that we had Troy on in the last segment. Want to stay in the AFC West, though, Michael, before we get to some of these headlines, because last night we were watching the Chiefs-Jaguars game, and unfortunately for Kansas City, their wide receiver Hollywood Brown, their free agent pickup, suffered a shoulder injury. Now, he has since been released from the hospital and has been cleared to return to Kansas City, but now his participation in their Week 1 game opening night against the Baltimore Ravens is in question. We don't know where things stand with the Rashee Rice thing. Could there be a suspension this year? Maybe it plays out next year. We don't know right now, but it feels like there's another layer to this Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver room where there's a little bit more uncertainty now in the injury front with Hollywood Brown.
Well, I think Hollywood's definitely declared out for the opening game. I mean, so he's not going to play against Baltimore. I think that's pretty clear, you know, and, you know, Xavier Worthy's a young player. Rashee Rice, you know, look, I have no idea what the league's going to position on that. Hardman is a guy they brought back because I think they're worried about their depth at receiver. My biggest concern is who's going to be the left tackle. I'm anxious to get down to the tape today and really study them against Jacksonville, where I could see, you know, Wanu Morris was hurt going into the game, so they started the rookie from BYU at left tackle. I want to watch this offensive line and see what that looks like, because I do think for all the conversation that the Chiefs are going to be better on offense, I don't know who's making that better, who's making them better. You know, they still, to me, have to be a team that runs the football. I still think the offensive line at the tackle position, whether it whomever is the left tackle and then Taylor at right tackle, is a weakness. Now, they have the best quarterback in football. So, to me, I'm anxious to see that. This is going to be a challenging game, opening game. Look, Andy does a great job of preparing his team, coming off byes, getting ready for the opening game of the season. Lost last year at home against Detroit. So, obviously, with Baltimore coming in, with Zach Orr as a defense coordinator, changes a lot of things. What's Baltimore going to look like on defense? There's a lot of questions about these two teams as we start. But I do think the Hollywood Brown, they're counting on him to be a big-time player. Kadarius Toney, you know, who they traded and gave up a lot of draft picks, gave up draft picks for, he's, you know, I don't think he's going to make the team. I think they've kind of come to the point where they can't count on him.
Yeah, Kadarius Toney is in Kadarius Toney land. That's one that you just don't even I wouldn't even factor that one in. I'm looking at the betting market right now for week one, and there wasn't a big movement, but there was a little bit of movement on the juice. Kansas City, the consensus number, they were 3 -105. Now that's 3 even money. So a little bit of interest. Some people grabbing those +3 -115 for the Baltimore Ravens in that spot there. Like you said, it sounds like you're pretty confident that Hollywood Brown's not going to play in this opening night game. We don't know what happens with Rashee Rice, but the Ravens, I'm sure, wanting revenge in that spot in the rematch of last year's AFC title game. This one, though, being played at Arrowhead Stadium. All right, we saw a new development in the Bay Area, Michael. The San Francisco 49ers and wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. Our buddy Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report reporting that the two sides are now working towards a long-term extension. Shorts went ahead and reported that Ayuk recently had a sit-down meeting with Kyle Shanahan and others in the organization where, quote, some open and candid thoughts were expressed. The two sides have since restarted negotiations on a long-term deal, and there is some optimism that Ayuk could remain in San Francisco. We talked about this, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on the GM Shuffle podcast. You mentioned that you think that it's more likely that Ayuk stays in San Francisco, and now this report's backing that up to where maybe they actually get something done and they get Ayuk back on the field and find some sort of resolution.
Well, I think anytime you enter into this negotiation, right, it's challenging because, look, one team wanted to pay him over that 30 threshold, which he doesn't deserve, but they had to pay it. But the Patriots have to pay a tax because they're the Patriots, and no one thinks they're going to be a very good team. So they're going to have to overpay for players, which a lot of teams do. This isn't a knock on New England. That's just the reality of the situation. So, you know, that New England would have done that. Everybody else, why would anybody else pay over 30 when DJ Moore got 27.5? And everybody watching the tape is saying, well, Brandon, you're not better than DJ Moore. Why would I pay you more than DJ Moore? So here's what you're asking me to do, Brandon. You're asking me to pay you more than DJ Moore, and then you're asking me to compensate the 49ers. So I lose twice. I lose draft choices, and I lose cap room. Because every dollar I spend above the market value, it's a competitive disadvantage to myself. So at some point, he went out in the market, and Pittsburgh is going to sing the same song that San Francisco's been singing. Mm-hmm. Cleveland is going to sing the same song that San Francisco's been singing. Here's your market. Here's what we want to do. They'll probably be a little higher than San Francisco because they've got to lure them. But to me, I think this really, the biggest problem with Brandon Ayuk has been Brandon Ayuk, his unwillingness to accept the market. The market is the market. And so now he really doesn't want to leave. They've got a good team. Why would he leave? He goes to New England. Nobody will hear from him for 5 years. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like Chrissy and Paulie going to the Pine Barrens, you know? I mean, nobody's going to know where they are. And so, like, what are we doing here? So I think to me it makes common sense to come back to the table and negotiate and get a deal. But the deal can only happen when Brandon Ayuk says, okay, here's where we are. And the Niners know that next year with $17 million of Debo Samuel's contract, not guaranteed, that they're going to have to make a decision between Ayuk and Debo. I think they're prepared to do that. But they're not prepared to pay a ridiculous number for Ayuk, and I think that's why he's back at the table.
Yeah, I think, honestly, and I said this early on during this whole discourse with Ayuk and the Niners, when we saw the social media video when he was talking to Jaden Daniels about how, oh, they don't want me anymore and this and that. I was like, I think Ayuk has been taking a lot of these negotiations a little bit too personally when it's more just business. Like, the Niners want you. They value you. They just don't want to overpay, like, an astronomical amount of money to keep you on the team, given the fact that they got Purdy up. Nick Bosa has a big deal. They got all these guys. Trent Williams is holding out. They got to figure out his contract. There's so much that they have to do. They're not going going to overpay for a wide receiver. All right, we'll start previewing today's games to start hour number two next here on the Lombardi Line.